Some of you have begun taking up the study of systematic study of our four principal texts, devotional scriptures, Bhagavad Gita, Nectar Devotion, Nectar of Instruction, and Shriyusha Upanishad, right? Who is involved in that study? Okay. Where did you begin? Did you begin in the introduction of Bhagavad Gita? Nectar Devotion. Nectar of Instruction. Okay. Okay, well, when you get to Bhagavad Gita, in addition to the 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita, there's a fantastic introduction. Practically, if you understand the thoroughly, properly understand the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, you're all set. It's packed up with so much rich understanding of our devotional teachings. And if you look carefully at the dedication page to Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada dedicates the Bhagavad Gita to one of our predecessor acharyas, whose name is Baladev Vidyabhushan. So, just like on our altar, there's disciplic succession. Srila Prabhupada, his spiritual master Bhaktisiddhanta, his spiritual master Gaurakishore Das Babaji, his spiritual master Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his spiritual master, not pictured there, is Jagannath Das Babaji. So, like that, in disciplic succession, nearly a contemporary of Jagannath Das Babaji was Baladev Vidyabhushan, and among other things, one of the contributions of Baladev was that he wrote. There was a particular circumstance surrounding his doing so, but he wrote commentary for our disciplic succession on Vedanta Sutra. So you know what is Vedanta Sutra? It's the summary of all the Vedas, in little codes or sutras. And Srimad Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra by the compiler of the Vedas himself. Vyasadeva compiled the Vedas, he composed the Vedanta Sutras, little compact expressions of the whole of the Vedas, and then he explained the whole of the Vedas in Srimad Bhagavatam. But there was some historical event where it became necessary to write a Gaudiya commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So the person who did that was Baladev. Interesting history. One time we'll discuss it. But he also wrote a commentary on Bhagavad Gita. And that commentary on Bhagavad Gita was the principal commentary that Srila Prabhupada followed. And so he dedicated his Bhagavad Gita commentary to Baladev. And when you read through the introduction, there's mention of five main topics that are revealed or presented in Bhagavad Gita. And if you can understand these five topics, you can understand Bhagavad Gita. So would you like to know what those five topics are? Do you know what those five topics are? You want to guess? No. God. The living entities. Time. Material nature and karma. Five topics. And by understanding those five topics, you've understood the whole of Bhagavad Gita. So we're going to speak about one of those topics. The one that's least described in Bhagavad Gita. The one that's described most in Bhagavad Gita. There are more verses in Bhagavad Gita about the modes of material nature than any other topic. That means it's important, right? Krishna explains it a lot. modes of nature or prakriti. And then, of course, Ishvara, God. And the living entity, the jivas, and karma. Then there's this one other very important topic, time, that not so much is presented about time. I mean, what do you know about time from Bhagavad Gita? One verse, Krishna says, time I am, kalosmi, the destroyer of all things. And that's it. At least as far as the disclosure of Bhagavad Gita. So something that some persons here will be with us in Gita Nagari, some persons won't be coming to Gita Nagari, but the theme of our topic during the Gita Nagari retreat this coming Memorial Weekend is time, using time in Krishna's service. Properly using time in Krishna's service. So all the speakers are going to speak on that theme. And what I wanted to do here is a little prelude, something that I'm going to, not the whole thing, but part of what I'm going to present on what is time. Just like if we could say, what's the living entity? Or what's karma? Or what's Ishvara? What's the modes of nature? So this is the fifth one. What is time? So to do that, I'd like to read from third canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. You can look up the verse later if you like. Chapter 5, text number 10. If you have one of those little doodads, you can find the verse on your doodad. This is Vidura speaking with Maitreya. Now, who is Vidura? Vidura is the uncle of the Pandavas. He's the brother of Pandu and Dhritarashtra. He's the third brother. But he's not just one of the royal dynasty in the Kuru dynasty, but the Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 13, discloses that he is Yamaraj, one of the great Mahajans who doesn't have a very nice job. You know, some of you might have a job you're not so pleased with, but you have to do it because it maintains your family, one of those things. He has a job where he's busy morning till night, giving the reactions to the sinful deeds of those who are very sinful. From the human form of life, if one is very sinful, you go before Yamaraj. And he has an amazing capacity to know exactly all the wrong things that you've done. How embarrassing. And then he awards a suitable punishment. It's like a judge. The judgment day, one's brought before Yamaraj. So nobody ever says thank you to Yamaraj. It's a very thankless task. It's not. What he really wants to do is to be with Krishna, but he's serving Krishna remotely in this not very pleasant position. So to fulfill Yamaraj's desire, an arrangement was made by Krishna that he would be cursed by Manduka Muni. Did you know that? Manduka Muni, you know the story? The Vedas describe there were some thieves that were very accomplished, and they were stealing and stealing, and finally people got fed up and they formed a group that went chasing after the thieves. And they went running and running, and they were chasing and chasing, and they went up a mountain. They followed them up the mountain, and they found a cottage in the mountain. They went in the cottage. So the police force surrounded the cottage. And then they arrested everybody inside, including the sage that was inside the cottage. They thought he was a thief too. And that was Manduka Muni. So they were all brought before a judge, and the judge pronounced the death penalty. So just as they were about to be put to death, someone recognized, wait a minute, that's not one of the thieves, that's Manduka Muni. So he notified the king, and the king immediately came and begged pardon of Manduka Muni, please release him. So he was released. And Manduka Muni wasn't upset with the king, he was upset with Yamaraj. So he was so powerful, he went before Yamaraj and demanded an explanation. Why have you arranged this, that I would be killed for something I didn't do? And Yamaraj said, well, when you were a small boy, you had this practice of taking straws, sharpened, dried grass that became straw, and you were piercing insects with the straw. So for that activity, you were to die by being thrown on the chunga. Chunga, swords upraised, and the platform moves, and somebody falls onto the swords, and they're dead. So Manduka Muni said, when one is very small, like a small child, some behavior like that isn't equally punishable for someone who is an adult who does something like that. But you don't know the principles of Dharma properly. I curse you. You should take birth on earth and leave this post. So Yamaraj was cursed, and he took birth as Vidura. So Vidura was actually a very elevated personality. Yamaraj. He certainly knew the codes of Dharma. Without all the Mahabharata details, he knew the codes of Dharma, as Yamaraj knows the codes of Dharma. Better even than Bhishma Dev and Dronacharya, at least in the drama of this robing of Draupadi. It's only Vidura who stood up and said, stop this. This is a great violation of Dharma. And the Royal Assembly is just standing here watching and letting this happen, remaining silent. We'll be destroyed by this violation of Dharma. Women are always to be protected. And this is the opposite. We'll all be destroyed. You wait and see. So, Vidura knew Dharma very well. So he's a very elevated person, but when he left the royal palace, being insulted by Duryodhana, he went on pilgrimage. Described in the first canto, chapter 13, he went on pilgrimage. And one of the places that he visited was where he heard extensively from Maitreya. And Maitreya himself was a great personality. Maitreya Muni, great learned person, mystic, yogi. But more important even is Maitreya had heard the whole of Uddhava Gita directly. Didn't hear a recording of it. He was there and heard directly as Krishna spoke Uddhava Gita to Uddhava. So he had become a perfected being through that hearing. And Krishna, before departing at the end of his pastimes, he requested Maitreya to do the following service. He said, very soon, Vidura is going to come here in the deep darkness of the forest of Vrindavan, and I would like you to instruct him as you have heard from me. Vidura is very dear to me. So sure enough, a few days later, Vidura came. Krishna knows things before they happen because he's omniscient. And Vidura came. Vidura was guided by Uddhava to go find Maitreya, and Vidura begins asking questions. Whole chapter filled with questions. And I'm going to read a little bit. Shukadeva Goswami said, Vidura, the best amongst the Kuru dynasty, who was perfect in devotional service to the Lord, thus reached the source of the celestial Ganges, Haridwar, where Maitreya, the great, fathomless, learned sage of the world, was seated. Vidura, who was perfect in gentleness and satisfied in transcendence, inquired from him. And he asks a number of questions, but I'm just going to read one part. O great sage, kindly narrate how the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the independent, desireless Lord of the three worlds and the controller of all energies, accepts incarnations and creates the cosmic manifestation with perfectly arranged regular principles for its maintenance. Then he asks about time. Looking for that verse. What happened? What's the verse?
It's chapter
10, verse. Chapter 10. Excuse me. Yeah. That explains why I can't find it. Very good. Vidura inquired from Maitreya, O my Lord, O greatly learned sage, kindly describe eternal time, which is another form of the Supreme Lord, the wonderful actor, right? Time I am. Another form of the Supreme Lord, the wonderful actor. What are the symptoms of eternal time? Please describe them to us in detail. Maitreya said, eternal time is the primeval source of the interactions of the three modes of material nature. It is unchangeable and limitless, and it works as the instrument of the Supreme Personality of Godhead for his pastimes in the material creation. So this verse's purport is packed. I'll read it slowly. There's like each sentence is volumes can be spoken about, but here's Prabhupada's purport summarizing what is time. So we've already heard two things. Time is a form identical with the Supreme Lord that we heard in his question. Now we're in this, the verse, it's time is unchangeable, limitless, the source of the three modes of material nature, and it's an instrument of the Personality of God. So its instrument is Shakti, Kala Shakti. So the energy and the energetic are inseparable. In that sense, the energy is not different than the energetic. Time, I am. Purport. The impersonal time factor is the background of the material manifestation as the instrument of the Supreme Lord. It is the ingredient of assistance offered to material nature. No one knows where time began and where it ends, and it is time only which can keep a record of all the creation, maintenance and destruction of the material manifestation. This time factor is the material cause of creation and is therefore a self-expansion of the personality of Godhead. Time is considered the impersonal feature of the Lord. Just this morning, you read another verse in chapter 21 of this third canto, where this is Kardama Muni, very early in the creation. He's seeing Lord Vishnu before him like Dhruva did. Dhruva did meditation on fixed and trance on the Supreme Lord, and then the Lord appeared before him. You know that pastime. So Dhruva offered prayers. Here also Maitreya is offering prayers, and one of his prayers, the one we read this morning, is he's appreciating or glorifying Vishnu that you have this wheel, which is time. And time has three, the word in Sanskrit is nabhi. Nabhi means navel. Or three phases of time, past, present, and future. And it has 360 spokes, and it has six rims, and something, you know, so many things. There's seasons. There's so many months per year. It uses the number 13 because we do calculation by solar. In Vedic astronomy is calculation by lunar. So there's 13 months in the lunar calendar, the 13th appearing every 3 years, right? Purushottam month. Every 3 years. So it's 12, and then every 3 years there's the 13th. Time works like that. With six rims. No good. No good. Mataji, no good. Okay. We'll see how long it lasts. Then it says, as it's just read, these three phases of time are moving around the hub, or rotating around Brahman, timeless Brahman. So what's in the spiritual world? Prabhupada's way of saying this is, time is conspicuous by its absence. It's a nice phrase. Time is conspicuous by its absence. Time as we know it, the past, present, and future kind of time, is conspicuous by its absence. What kind of time is there in the spiritual world? Eternal time. Time that knows no beginning. It knows no end. It's beginningless. It's endless. It's eternal. That's time in the spiritual realm. I'll go back and read the other part of the purport, but I want to just do a few things. This past, present, and future, the three phases of time. They're described very briefly in Sri Brahma Samhita. So I'm going to cover three things. Not just past, present, and future, but this is an illustration of Mahavishnu. And Mahavishnu is lying in the causal ocean, the Karana ocean, Karana Sindhu. And he's Karana Dakshayi Vishnu, or Mahavishnu. And time, in the Vedic picture of time, time is cyclical. Just keep cycling again and again. Now, if you had to be the creator, that's a very practical way to do it. You don't have to do it differently each time. It's cycles. Just like the seasons, or anything you can think of that has phases of time, phases of the moon. know, the movements of the sun, the seasons. Think of anything that has to do with time, and it's cyclical. That's Vedic picture of time. So the picture that we're seeing is where during the time of cosmic annihilation, the living entities are within the body of Mahavishnu in a dormant state. They're still conscious, but they're in the lowest stage of consciousness, according to the Vedic depiction. Conscious, sleep, deep sleep. Deep sleep is, in Sanskrit, is susupti, or it's like anesthesia. Someone that's put under anesthesia, that's what they're under, the susupti. And then they come out of the susupti state and they're dreaming, and then they become awake. Three stages of consciousness. So the living entities, all the living entities are withdrawn within the body of Mahavishnu in this susupti state. And the duration of time of the cosmic manifestation is equal to the duration of time of the cosmic dissolution. It's cyclical. So from that, and you can't say when it began. Since time immemorial, the cycle is going on. So the living entities are in this dormant state, and the personality of Godhead, Mahavishnu, two things. He wishes that those living entities come again to him in a loving mood, an eternal loving service mood. That's his wish. In Sanskrit, this is Ichha. He has a desire. And when God has a desire, it happens. That's all he has to do. He doesn't have to lift a pinky. He just desires. And then his internal potency, in this case, her name is Rama Devi. Rama Devi understands the desire of her master, as a wife has an understanding of the desire of husband. She's perfectly understanding because she's his internal potency, his desire, and she assists him in his desire. And that's what's depicted here. Well, he glances at the shadow energy known by different names. Here is the depiction of Durga, but other names are Chaya Devi. Chaya means shadow. So there's an object, and there's the shadow of the object. The shadow is nothing other than coming from the object itself, but there isn't substance there, it's just shadow. So the shadow energy, or another term that's used in the Vedas is pradhan. Pradhan. Pradhan means it's like a cloud in the sky. Like, you know, there's sky. And up in the sky there may be a cloud. So the cloud is also within the sky. So like, you know, you get in an airplane going down the runway. Zoom, zoom, zoom. You're lifting off the ground. And then you're below the clouds. Then you go through the clouds. Then you're above the clouds. So while you're in the clouds, look out to the left side, to the right side, and what do you see? You see clouds. But you're actually in the sky. Yes? Below the cloud, above the cloud, and within the cloud, you're within the sky. Yes? So this pradhan is like a cloud that's in the vastness of the spiritual sky. And Mahavishnu glances at that cloud, or pradhan, or chaya devi. He just glances. And his glance is described in Brahma Samhita like this. They're pencil rays. Something like you might imagine at night, there's someone has a flashlight. In India, you call it a torch. So here's a laser pointer. So there's a light on the wall. It's coming from this little device. But if you have a flashlight, then you see rays and then a beam of light on the wall, right? So like that, the glance of Mahavishnu is going towards this undifferentiated state of the totality of material energy called Pradhan. And according to Sri Brahma Samhita, there are two ingredients that are within that glance. And the two ingredients are arranged by the internal potency, Rama Devi. Two ingredients. Here they are. One is the time energy, and the other is the living entities, the jivas. The glance of Mahavishnu has two elements, time energy and the living entities. Because the purpose is to give the living entities that were within his body a chance to again return to him in a loving mood. So this is making that provision. And this is the sequence of events to make that provision. His glance, he doesn't do anything. It specifically says in Brahma Samhita, there's no direct contact with matter by God. It's indirect, he just his glance. So then there's a breakdown of the glance. Rama arranges for the living entities and a transformation of herself, because she has unlimited components to her potency, and the material portion of her potency in the form of time energy and the living entities are then entrusted to the glance. And the glance has a name. And the name is Shambhu. One of the names of Lord Shiva is Shambhu. And that glance, I'm just describing now, the purpose of all of this is time. What's time? So the time energy and the living entities are carried by Shambhu, or the glance of Mahavishnu, to contact the material elements. Excuse me, this pradhan, this shadow energy, or the cloud of material energy. And when this dormant, inactive, undifferentiated totality of material energy, that's God's energy, is activated or energized by the living entities and the time energy, then things start to happen over there. Like the elements start to differentiate out from the undifferentiated big warehouse. It's all jumbled up. The first element that comes out is our dear friend, false ego. So even before we do anything, there's false ego. And then we start doing things according to the modes of nature, and then the modes of nature mixing with false ego produce other elements. The modes of goodness mixing with false ego produces the mind.